The Man Who Ate a Fortune. You are in England, in the county of Gloucester, in the 18th century. Within a fine house overlooking the square, a dinner is being served. But first, come into the kitchen.
Hurry up there, Pietro. Dutch Picante will be ruined.
Ach, mein Gott, if you don't watch out, the turkey livers will be too done. Turn the spit there, fool dumb cop.
Poor Enrique. He gets tired of dressing turkey livers all day long.
I've offered to do it for him, but he dare not let me. Mr. Rogerson had him sent all the way from Munich.
And yet it is a good life we lead. I have cooked for His Majesty the King, and even he never laid a such a table. It is a fine thing to cook for an epicure.
Oh, in no time he will have no money.
No money? Why, Mr. Rogerson, he has a fortune.
Yeah, and what does he do with it? £100 he pays for the plover's eggs direct from Brittany.
These are olive oils. She'll come only from the trees which grow on a certain hill near Siena. Last month it cost him £500.
Remember the cold winter? He paid £100 for the dish of strawberries on New Year's Day? He's a mad one, the master.
Someday he will eat simple food and be glad to have it.
No, I do not think so. If you cannot have a delicacies, I think someday.
Monsieur le Comte, you are enjoying your dinner?
Yes, Monsieur Rogerson.
Will you not try these plover's eggs? They came from your own Brittany.
Ah, extraordinaire. How do you do it, Monsieur Rogerson? While eating, I have been transported from Italy to Spain and now back to France.
I am complimented, Monsieur. You see, I have cooks from every country. Each prepares only one food. My friend Mr. Chambers here, he knows.
By Jove, yes. When we were traveling in Germany, we stopped at an inn in Munich, and there Rogerson had some turkey livers en brochette. From that day, he never rested until that cook was in his kitchen.
But, Monsieur Rogerson, if I may be so bold, do you never tire of this once in a while? Do you not forget delicacies?
Never. When my father died, he left me a fortune to do with as I pleased. I see. You would like, perhaps, a taste of wild honey. It was brought to me directly from an apiary on the slopes of Mount Hymettus.
Oh.
See, does it not suggest to you the sunlight of Greece, the flavor of the ancient days?
Ah, exquisite. Yeah.
And when we came back, Monsieur le Comte, Rogerson had with him the favored recipes of every famous inn in Europe.
And in another 2 years, all the favored cooks were in my kitchen also. Monsieur, will you try a little specialty of mine?
Ah, what a delicate fragrance. And what are these?
Sturgeon eggs from the Volga.
Tiens.
I have the fish brought to me alive.
Oh, mais non.
A cook from the Russian Imperial Court has prepared a sauce this evening especially for you.
Mon Dieu, you are incomparable. C'est une chose incroyable. Jamais de la vie, jamais autre.
When Mr. Rogerson's father died, he left a fortune of $750,000. In 9 years, Rogerson was penniless. During that time, he counted the minutes between meals. Then, without money to buy the delicacies he craved, he could not face life and committed suicide. Strange as it seems, in 9 years, he had actually eaten a fortune of $750,000. Birth of the Star-Spangled Banner. The English have burned Washington. As they advance toward Baltimore, they take many prisoners, among them being a certain Dr. Beans, innocent of any wrongdoing. Quickly, the prisoners are transferred to British warships at anchor off the coast near Fort McHenry. When this news comes to President Madison, he sends a young man under a flag of truce out to the enemy fleet. His rowboat is now approaching the British flagship.
Here we are, sir. Be careful, sir, when you stand up. Hold on tight to the companion ladder.
Oh, yes, thank you. I will. There. I have it now. You'd better not wait. It's dangerous here. Our guns might fire on this ship.
Very well, sir. I row back ashore.
Oh, these steps are steep. Ropes are sharp.
Good afternoon, sir.
Oh, I'm Francis Scott Key, under flag of truce with a message from President Madison to Admiral Cockburn.
Very good, sir. Please come with me to the quarterdeck. Up this ladder, please.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Officer of the deck presents his compliments to Admiral Cockburn. An enemy messenger, Mr. Key, is here under flag of truce to see the Admiral.
Just a moment, sir. Admiral Cockburn, sir. An enemy messenger under flag of truce to
see him.
You may come in, sir.
I'm Admiral Cockburn.
I am Francis Scott Key. President Madison requests the release of Dr. Beans. Dr. Beans is in no way connected with government business, sir.
Beans, let me see. Oh, yes. I cannot give you an immediate answer, Mr. Key. Won't you sit down? You see, there are several items connected with this matter that we... take care of this prisoner. My place is on deck.
Mr. Key, you come with me, sir. I regret I must place you in this inner cabin for the present, sir.
All night, the firing continues. While Francis Scott Key is alone in his cabin, wondering what side will have the final victory. At last, dawn breaks, gray and forbidding over the water. In the distance, Key can see the outline of Fort McHenry. He strains his eyes to discover who now holds the fortress.
Say, can you see? By the dawn's early... If it were only a little lighter I could see. Well, thank God, a rocket over Fort McHenry. Our flag is still flying. Our flag is still there. That's it. That's it. Our flag is still there. And the rocket's red glare gave proof through the night that our flag was still there.
1814. In Baltimore, a family has finished its supper, and Eliza has settled down to read the Baltimore Patriot.
Mamie?
Yes, Eliza?
Here's a new song. Listen.
That has quite a swing to it.
I tell you, let's play it on the piano. I'll wager that Ned and Father will be right in here.
All right.
Here, I'll fold it so it won't fall over. Now.
Through the dawn's early light, what so proudly we
I thought this would bring you. It's a new piece of music called the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, well, that's very good. Hey, that's excellent. Who wrote it?
Francis Scott Key.
Really? Why, I used to know him. Well, well.
What's this?
Oh, come on in, Dad. It's a new piece of music.
Stop it, nonsense. I've heard that tune for 40 years.
What?
But, Father, it's just been printed. The music is by James Stafford Smith.
Again, I say nonsense. That's an old drinking song, and I don't approve of young girls singing it.
A drinking song?
Well, yes, of course it is. I've sung that song with friends in London over many a tankard of ale. This Smith is trying to play a hoax. You just listen to me.
To an Akron in heaven... Where he sat in full glee, a few sons of harmony sent a petition that he then in la-da-dee-dum-dee-dee.
Now then, do I speak the truth or do I not?
Whether it's a drinking song or whether it's a marching song, I don't know, Father dear. But I don't think you're a very good singer.
What's that? What's that? This tune was first of all a stately old song of France. Then it was brought to England and turned into a drinking song to honor a famous Greek poet named Anacreon. It was he who originated the phrase wine, women, and song. 20 years later, James Stafford Smith lifted the tune bodily and said that he had written the music to Francis Scott Key's words. Strange as it seems, the Star Spangled Banner, the official anthem of the United States, was a French tune sung in an English tavern to honor a Greek poet.